and welcome to episode 9 of Rather Good Chat. And today we are talking about weather. And I'm Joel.
And I'm Dave.
Hooray!
Hello, Joel.
Hello, David. How are you today, David?
I'm peculiar today.
Very peculiar or just slightly peculiar?
Oh, very peculiar.
Oh.
People look at me and they say, ooh, that's a peculiar man.
Oh, that's good, isn't it? That's much better than the usual screaming.
Yeah.
The massive existential dread that just kind of leaks out of them in a unearthly wail, and then they collapse onto the floor gibbering.
Oh, I thought you were going to say leaks out of them in a sort of unearthly fluid.
Oh, right. I mean, that as well. The fluids come after the collapse, right? It's when they see your thorax.
Do you say gibbering or gibbering? I've heard people say gibbering before.
Really?
I've always said,
I suppose,
gibbering.
Gibbons. You don't say gibbons, do you?
You don't, no.
Oh, God, this is like that GIF thing, isn't it? Yeah, gibbons, the lovely, majestic animal of the treetop.
Yes, yeah.
Hoot. They do a lovely hoot, gibbons. One of the first characters I ever put in an animation was the gibbon with a ribbon.
What did the gibbon with a ribbon do?
He saved the day.
Oh.
I forget how exactly. It had something to do with going to the beach and Nazis and Zeppelins.
Of course,
I think
there might have been a
Hitler crab in there somewhere.
There must have been.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with gibbering. And it's the size of your thorax that normally does it. So is it the thorax that's kind of gone to peculiar? Have you just covered up the thorax in such a way that people aren't utterly struck with mind-breaking horror whenever they see you, and they can just concentrate on how benignly peculiar you are now?
Yeah, I've hidden the sternum and the thorax away because, you know, they're obviously quite unsettling. Yeah,
and so that's an understatement.
The rest of me is just mildly peculiar.
What have you done then? Have you put like a cylinder of lead around your midsection?
Well, yeah, there's the lead, obviously, and then there's a sort of decorative curtain to
right.
make it look nice.
And like a shower there, curtain?
Yeah, a shower curtain, exactly that, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And then around there, there's a sort of ring of defensive spikes.
Right.
You know, in case anyone gets too close.
Yeah.
And then around
there... Well,
that's
there, good, isn't it?
There's bees.
Yeah, oh, bees, right, yeah.
Lots of bees, yeah.
Yeah. How are the bees? Friendly or angry?
Angry. Very
oh, wow.
angry.
Yeah, yeah, okay. How do you make sure you don't get attacked by the bees?
Well, they know their place, right? They know their place.
Okay, and their place is on the outside of the spikes.
Yeah, because bees obviously belong to a strictly hierarchical society. So
oh,
I just had
right.
to...
Are you their queen?
I'm their over-queen.
Did you have to kill their existing queen in single combat?
No,
so
no,
that
I just
they
had
would
to
recognize you as their queen.
I had to convince her to bend the knee.
Oh,
once,
I see.
Once she
bend all six of them.
Bend all six knees. Yeah, yeah. the bee's knees.
The bee's knees. That's where that comes from.
It is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Once she folded, the rest of the hive obviously, you know, followed her lead. That's what they do.
Well, that's
bees.
Good, isn't it? Her bee lead.
A bee lead. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the cylinder of lead, well, I mean, I can see why people think you look a bit peculiar with the lead and the spikes and the shower curtain and the bees. But how are you, I mean, is that useful for, I know you've got an awful lot of uraniums, like the lead cylinder must be useful either for keeping the radiation in or out. What are you doing? Are you trying to keep the radiation out, or are you just putting it inside the cylinder with you to keep all that lovely, delicious radiation to yourself?
Well, quite a lot of uraniums have just disappeared into the sternum, right? Into the thorax.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I can't remember which one is baffling now. Is it? Did I say thorax? Or sternum?
Well, I mean, it's your sternum's the worst. No, your thorax is the worst, right?
Right,
your sternum,
right.
The sternum, I think it's around your sternum area that it starts to leak into this reality, isn't it?
Right, so, yes. Yeah, I think that's correct.
It's horrifying, but not mind-breakingly incomprehensible.
No.
Whereas the thorax is not, you can't, there aren't really words for it, right? But certainly once having seen it, you'll never really function properly again.
Yes.
Human mind isn't equipped to deal with some things.
Yeah, it's like in a computer program when there's a memory overflow and parts of the system get overwritten by random data. That's what happens to people's brains when they see it.
Yeah, your thorax, that is. The sternum is more just equivalent to just some kind of awful, horrific, you know, kind of horror shock, right?
Yeah. I mean, the haunted goat head, for example.
Yeah. It's still there, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, it's eternal.
Last I heard it was speaking in Old English.
Yes, it certainly was. Yeah.
So it's given up on the Norse now.
It sometimes chants in a very deep voice Latin backwards.
Oh, right. God, it's really going through all the old languages, isn't it? Hard to know what it's aligned with, whether it's aligned with the Northmen or the Saxons or the Romans.
Yeah.
Nothing Celtic.
Hey, I was reading about Latin recently. This is
good
not
for
relevant
you.
Or anything. But sort of like classical Latin and ecclesiastical Latin have wildly different pronunciations.
Really? Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So,
like, you know, how when you go to the church today, they pronounce everything differently.
Yes. Yes. like when they want to say, hello, Joel, how are you doing? It comes out as, get out, stay out. Why do you keep coming here?
You ungodly abomination. Don't step foot inside this sacred place.
You corrupt everything you touch. Yeah.
You leave a trail of screaming maggots everywhere you go.
Yeah. But, you know, so, for example, you know the famous Julius Caesar quotation, Vini, Vidi, Vici.
Oh, that was about me. I came, I saw, I veached. He was the first of the veaches, yeah.
But in classical Latin, like as the Romans would have said, it's something much more like wady, wady, weeky.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Weirdos. So no one actually spoke like that in Rome, right? Is that like a later ecclesiastical thing, not an actual language thing?
The ch sound and the v and all that, that's much later. That's kind of basically the Catholic Church and
hang on, which way round have I got this? In ancient Rome it was weni widi weechi.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant the other way around, that the church started saying weni widi weechi.
Oh, no, nowadays you'd say Vini, Vidi, Vici or something like that.
And that's the church.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's just my
weird
understanding.
Yeah, well, I mean, my daughter's learning Latin at the moment, and I'm pretty sure she uses V sounds. Mm. Yeah. Interesting. I wonder if they're learning ecclesiastical Latin rather than Roman Latin then.
Probably.
So they'd sound like they had a speech impediment if they go to ancient Rome.
Pretty much, yeah. Or just, you know, saying all the words
God. Well, that's going to be embarrassing if they have an exchange.
Are you expecting her to be transported back to ancient Rome?
I presume so. You know, she's only just started, so we haven't seen all the school trips yet. But you know, the other languages do that, right? So, yeah, I'd expect so.
Yeah.
Weni widi weechi. So am I pronouncing my name wrong?
Weeky.
Should I be
Weeky.
Joel Weech?
Weni widi weeky.
Weeky! As in wicked a wicked a whack.
Just exactly like that. Yeah.
Weni, wiki, wicked, wicked, a wicked, a whack. So who was it who said that?
It was you just now.
Right, okay. So he sounds more like me doing an impression of a late 90s youth pop rap act, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly like that.
Oh, interesting.
I'd just like to say to any ancient Romans listening, I'm definitely butchering the pronunciation of all these things. So I'm very sorry.
Yeah,
please,
well, that's a key demographic that you've just alienated.
Please don't run me through with your gladius. Thank you.
Just a tip for any Romans who do want to stab Dave many times in the back. You want to watch out for the bees and the spikes. And you're going to need to aim to miss the lead pipe as well.
Yeah. Don't forget the fleshy bits.
Yeah, not that I want to help your assassins or anything, David. I want to make it quite clear to you that I'm not actively pro your assassination. I'm, you know, at most vaguely favourable.
If I was stabbed to death by an ancient Roman, from your point of view, that would be a thing that happened.
Yeah, I wouldn't be dancing in the streets with a picture of you and an X through it, chanting, "No more Dave, no more Dave, hooray, hooray, hooray."
Yeah.
I would probably.
But likewise, you wouldn't come you wouldn't come to the funeral.
No, I mean, my reaction to the news would probably be a kind of, noise.
Yeah.
I'd probably be more interested that it was the ancient Romans who'd got to you than any other aspect of the news.
Yeah, that is the that's the lead point, isn't it? Absolutely.
Yeah. You want to watch out for those ancient Romans. They do cause a lot of trouble, don't they?
Oh, they really do.
Yeah.
Travelling through time and assassinating people.
Yeah, travelling slowly forwards through time.
at a rate of 1 minute per minute.
Yeah. It's taken them ages to get here. Yeah, so we're talking about the weather.
Oh, we are, yes. Yeah, the weather.
Or just weather. I noticed that we described it as weather rather than the weather. I don't know if there's any functional difference in those two things, but I thought I'd better be accurate. Are they not? Hey, what's your favourite weather fact, Dave?
My favourite weather fact? Ooh.
Or weather thing.
Weather thing. Mm. My favourite weather thing is probably... Well, do you know what? Do you know what it actually is? And I think we might have talked about this before. It's rainbows and the how they're the light from the sun behind you refracting.
Yeah, that is good,
isn't
it?
At a particular angle. I think we might have talked about this before, though.
I don't know if that's... Does that count as weather? We have talked about it anyway. Yeah, I mean, they're not weathering at you. You don't get affected by a rainbow. You just look at it. Weather end?
It's sunlight refracting through rain, which is a weather.
Yeah, but the rainbow itself is a side effect of the weather, which is the... I don't know. We need a weatherologist to come and tell us where weather itself ends and secondary effects of weather begin. You know, otherwise just a free-for-all. It's just madness.
Why do meteorologists study the weather and not meteors?
Oh, I thought they studied meat.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Right, okay. I mean, maybe it's all of those things. I mean, a lot of the weather is caused by the heating of meat lumps from space entering the atmosphere very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Vast clouds of meat. Intergalactic clouds.
Where
of meat.
A lot of our meat comes from, people don't really realise, but
yeah,
you know, yeah.
Whenever well, all you meat hear is that, formed, all meat is formed at the heart of a star, right?
Primordial meat. Everything heavier than hydrogen is formed at the heart of a star, isn't it? So
yeah,
meat included. Yeah, I think at different levels of pressure at different stages of the supernova create your beeves, your porks. Your chickens, your emu, all that stuff.
Yeah, those are the main ones, aren't they?
They're the major meats, yeah. Emu's going down in popularity these days, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's horrible.
Oh, yeah, the emu itself is horrible. Yes. The meat's delicious, isn't it? It's just quite difficult trying to farm them because you have to face the torrent of abuse from the emu.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's true, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're formed of emuons. Those are the particles that...
Oh, very good. That's good. Yeah.
It is good, isn't it? Yeah, I'm quite pleased with that. Emuons from space hit the Earth, gradually collect into emus.
That's what Einstein's most famous equation is about. E equals mu.
It is, yeah, and it's about space muons forming emus. These days, they have massive collectors, don't they? In huge areas of desert, largely in Australia, because there's so much desert there, and the emuons kind of hit these collectors and roll down the sides, and gradually accumulate into an emu in the middle.
Well, yes, well they used to, but as I'm sure you know, natural emus are incredibly hard to come by. So these days, most emus are synthetic and or emulations, if you
will. Oh, very good. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I didn't realise that was the case, but now you mention it, I see how important this has become in modern day agriculture.
Yeah.
Hey, my favourite weather fact.
Oh, yeah.
is that tornadoes in the northern hemisphere spin clockwise, and in the southern hemisphere, they spin counterclockwise because of the Coriolis effect.
Is that true?
Same with whirlpools.
Wait. Okay, so the Coriolis effect is often... the thing people say a lot about how, like, if you flush a toilet in the southern hemisphere, it goes one way.
Yeah, that's definitely a lie.
And that's not right. That's not true.
It's not true, I'm joking.
I was going to ask, what happens? Wouldn't that imply that on the equator, tornadoes would just be static?
Yeah, they're just a column of rushing air. Yeah.
Not even rushing, because nothing's spinning, just a column of air.
Yeah, it's just going up and down at walking speed. Yeah. But only while they're on the equator. They deviate by a millimetre and they suddenly pick up hundreds of miles an hour.
Oh, it doesn't ramp up depending on how far from the equator you are.
No. You're either going at mind-bending destruction or nothing. Yeah.
Right.
And if it travels over the equator, it reverses without any hesitation at all and is immediately going in the opposite direction.
Well, that seems quite physically
impossible,
dramatic,
doesn't it? But it happens. In the northern hemisphere, they suck you up into the air. In the southern hemisphere, they screw you down into the ground. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, no.
Due to the Coriolis effect again.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah. It's the same with whirlpools, you know. In the northern hemisphere, whirlpools suck you down into the depths, the opposite way around.
Yeah.
Because water's the opposite of air. And in the southern hemisphere, whirlpools go up into the sky.
They just fling you into space, don't they?
They fling you into the sky, yeah. They're very, very hard. Yeah. I think they might be looking at using artificially enhanced whirlpools as a way of launching satellites in New Zealand.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Because they get more powerful the further south you go, right?
Unlike tornadoes.
Unlike tornadoes, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Correct. Yeah. Do you know how I think the reason people misunderstand that stuff is because they don't get how the Coriolis effect works, which is actually really simple. And once you've kind of grasped that, it all makes sense.
Do explain.
So if you imagine the Earth wasn't rotating,
right?
You've got very hot air at the equator where all the sunlight hits the atmosphere, and very cold air at the poles where the light is kind of hitting at an angle, so it's much less intense. Mm. So the air is much cooler. And so you get a very normal convection current where the hot air rises, travels towards the cold bit where it cools and sinks, and then travels back to the equator at ground level, right? You can imagine that very simple convection current forms a loop north and a loop south. But then when you spin the Earth, obviously it gets complicated because as the air travels north and south, it gets pushed backwards because the Earth is rotating under it. And so that spin turns into a vortex. And that vortex obviously is in the opposite direction in the north from in the south because the air is traveling in an opposite direction to start with. And that's how you get these gigantic weather systems in the mid-latitudes that have a very big scale swirl to them. It's because of that north-south convection current being disrupted by the rotation of the Earth. Causes a swirl. And that's why it works at very high scales. And it's just really obvious once you understand that very simple concept that anybody talking about small-scale rotations like sinks or toilets is just talking total nonsense because it couldn't possibly affect it at that scale. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, it does. So you're saying it's all to do with the gnomes?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like a vortex in a sink is to a very high-level weather vortex system as a gnome is to a human.
Fictional.
Fictional, yes, correct. They don't actually swirl in the sink in the same way as gnomes don't actually.
They just don't actually.
No, they don't. I mean, I'm joking, obviously. For any gnomes listening, I'm sorry. That's very gnomist, and we are above that. And shouldn't really let these gnomisms slip through.
I'm not above that. Know.
Aren't no, you? I'm you're above the gnomes because they're so small.
I'm not the gnomes. They're very... Yeah.
Oh, sorry. That was gnomist as well. I'm really sorry to any
it's not
gnomes,
gnomist to say
gnomes.
That gnomes are small.
Well, I don't know. You're on very dodgy ground there. What happens if you identify as a kind of person of a known background, but you happen to be normal size? Where are you there? What happens if your mum and dad are both gnomes, but you're human scale? Or does that never happen? Right. Is that impossible?
Well, I mean, we're getting into things like identity and self-identity and stuff, aren't we?
Right.
I'd have to say I'd probably just respect what the person identified as.
Okay, how about if they told you that they were a normal human, but they were definitely a gnome? Like a foot tall and wearing a gnome costume and magic.
With a holding a fishing rod.
Yeah. Furiously fishing in your garden, despite there not being a pond there. Yeah.
Well, I would probably...
Would you take him at his word, that gnome?
I think I'd have to, right? You'd have to. You know, just give him the courtesy of respecting his identity. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we're on very dodgy ground here, so I'm probably not.
Yeah, I really think we are.
Any further.
I don't know what you mean, Joel. You're implying there's some kind of real world issue here that we're awkwardly skirting around. I don't know.
Yeah, gnomes can be very dangerous if you provoke them. Right? They look quite cute, but you want to watch out for them. They'll fish you right up.
Yeah. And then, like, they have rows of serrated teeth, don't they?
They do. It's just
all over them.
A gnome is basically a tube full of jagged, like, you know, kind of gnarled, rusty steel spikes inside.
Yeah.
They're awful.
It's like
things.
Historically sailors. You know, like sailors used to see manatees and think they were mermaids.
Sorry?
Have you never heard this?
Sorry, you mean, are you implying that, okay, are you implying that manatees are actually mermaids, or are you implying that mermaids aren't real? Which of these things are you implying?
Well, neither.
Well, I don't see any other option.
I'm making no comment to whether or not mermaids are real.
Right, okay. Oh, they just mistake, in the same way as you might see a dwarf and mistake him for a gnome.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
You'd see a manatee and think, oh, that's a mermaid, hooray.
Yeah, we're talking about two real things. I mean, if you are mistaking the manatee for a mermaid, given that mermaids are famously very pretty, you probably have quite low standards for what counts as prettiness.
Joel.
Don't you think?
Are you saying manatees aren't pretty?
Yes.
The beautiful manatee.
Yes, I am saying that. I mean, they're beautiful within the context of a manatee, but beauty in the manatee world is a different kind of beauty from that of a mermaid, isn't it? Unless mermaids, are they the other way around? Do they have like manatee bodies and
Joel,
fish tails or manatee
beauty,
heads? And...
Beauty famously is in the eye of the beholder.
Oh, you're talking about those mermaids, aren't you, where... It's a manatee top half and just the legs of a person.
The legs of a beautiful lady, yeah.
Oh, not even necessarily a beautiful lady, you know, like a pudgy man.
Right.
Pudgy, hairy man.
Right.
Well, that's a merman, isn't it? The body of a manatee and the legs of a pudgy man.
A merchap.
A merchap.
Where's the transition between manatee and man? You're implying it's above the waist.
It's at the waist.
At the waist. Above the abdomen, I guess.
Above the abdomen, yeah.
How does that work? Because the circumference of a manatee's abdomen is considerably larger than a normal human's abdomen.
Right? Yeah, well, we're talking about a very pudgy man here.
Very pudgy. Right.
Very, very pudgy.
It'd have to be, wouldn't it? He would. There's no way you could possibly...
Yeah.
I'd have to be a very skinny manatee or a quite pudgy man.
Yeah, it's the pudgy man. Yeah. I feel like we're using the word pudgy as if it's an acceptable word that everybody knows what it means. I'm not 100% sure it's in use. Do you feel like pudgy is a word that's in use?
I think it is. I think people know what pudgy is.
Okay, good. Well, that's all right.
It means you have a lot of pudge.
Oh, right. Because I thought we were talking about, like, you know, those little yellow birds that live in cages and tweet.
Right, I see what you're talking about. Yeah, parrots. Yeah. Parrots, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I thought it was the that little yellow bear with the eye patch that raises money for charity.
Interestingly and unrelatedly, I've been calling my youngest the Spudgerigar lately because she resembles both a small singing bird and a potato. The Spudgerigar is a beautiful creature.
Your youngest in no way resembles a potato.
She does. She's the potato child.
Right. I hesitate to ask, why, in what way does she resemble a potato? I've met her. She's not at all potato-like.
Well, you know, every evening we nestle her down in her little grow bag so she can get her roots into the soil and sprout, and in the morning we come and harvest her and she's all, you know, ready for eating. Delicious.
This is all sounding very sinister.
But she also has lovely yellow plumage and a beak of hard baked potato skin.
Right.
Yeah.
So she's baked?
Well, only her beak. You can't bake the whole... Well, the potato bits are largely baked, yeah. You wouldn't bake the budgerigar bits.
Does she have any kind of filling? Any cheese or beans or anything?
Oh, yeah. I mean, potatoes grow with the fillings in, right? That's what the different varieties of potato are.
Yeah, you've got the tuna mayonnaise potato.
Yep.
The cheese potato.
Yep.
That's it, isn't it?
There's the cheese. There's King Edward, which grows with some human flesh in, which was cloned originally from King Edward.
Right.
Yeah.
The Maris Piper, which presumably contains Maris Piper.
It does, yeah. Yeah, she's very tasty. Yeah. So weather, anyway.
Yes, yeah.
I feel we're doing a good job of discussing the weather here.
What's your favourite weather? If you could pick one weather for the entire world to have for the rest of time, like a planet from a show like Star Trek, right, which has just one weather.
Right. Without worrying about the consequences of it, right?
It'll just magically work like it does on telly.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be a bit boring here and say the perfect weather is an English summer's day, kind of June. So you're in the low to mid 20s with a beautiful blue sky with some, you know, some fluffy white clouds dotted around it, and you know, a long, long day. And all the, you know, the leaves are out and the flowers are out and the birds and the insects are out and about. Yeah, that's perfect, I think.
That is nice, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How about
you? We're assuming that the insects and birds wouldn't all just eventually die. They'd be fine with it.
Yeah, we're not doing consequences of the weather being permanent, right? Yeah.
No.
How about you?
I think sleet.
Are you joking now?
No, everyone's favourite weather is sleet, isn't it? Everyone loves freezing rain, don't they?
I'm not sure just, I do love sleet.
Just
I'm not
slamming
sure
into the side of your head as you trudge home from the shops.
Right. Is it cold enough that some of it's just kind of freezing a bit solid enough to hurt as it hits you?
Yeah. It's like being stabbed with tiny needles all the way home. And the footpath is completely flooded. And your shoes aren't waterproof, so your feet are sopping
wet.
Yeah,
so it's not cold enough to freeze and go hard. It's just mud on all the grassy bits and
it's
kind of cloying mud that takes your trainer off, so you have to put your foot down in a sock in the middle of the muddy puddle.
Yeah. And it's cold enough that, you know, it might snow, but no, it's too wet for that. You've got sleet.
And the wind's really strong and driving directly into your face.
Yeah. Yeah. You try and put your hood up, but it just blows off again.
Yeah, and you wait for buses, but they don't come because the roads are in disarray because of all the sleet.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
And they've had to cancel loads of trains. It's that time.
The trains are just—they've just given up on the trains.
Yeah, because it's like
after a week or so of eternal sleet, they've just decided trains aren't worth it anymore.
It comes at that time of the year when there's leaves everywhere and a single leaf can stop an entire train.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's ideal, is it? You really want it that time of year, because that's when you know you've got the dark and misery of winter.
Oh
stretching
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. It gets
for
dark
another
around
five.
Yeah. Five or six, it gets dark.
Six is quite late, isn't it? Like,
you have to get up and go to work when it's still night. Yeah, love it.
So it's still that you're doing all this in the dark at like 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
You close the door at work and you haven't seen any daylight. And
yeah.
Then by the time you get out, it's dark again because it gets dark at 4:30. And the wind has changed direction, so it's still directly in your face.
Yeah.
And it sleeps at you all the way home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get home and realise you left a window open and now your back room is flooded.
Oh, and the boiler's gone down, so you can't heat the house.
Of course it has, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you've got no fire or anything. Oh, man. And you can't get a plumber because they're massively over busy because everyone's boilers are going down.
Yeah, literally everyone, yeah. Yeah. And they can't get you anyway because the roads are all jammed.
Yeah, and they wouldn't bother if they could, because it's much nicer sitting at home in the warm than being out in all this horrible sleet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're spending all their time fixing their own boilers as well, aren't they?
Yeah, just constantly upgrading and pimping their boiler up. Like, you've got a massively unnecessarily powerful boiler covered in LED lights and crystals, Swarovski crystals. Yeah.
It's liquid cooled. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
You'd need to cool a boiler.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything. It just looks cool. They've got like an LED glow to all the pipe work. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Not enough
yeah.
pipes. Put more pipes on. Haven't got any more pipes to heat. Well, put on ones that are cold then. Stick them on. Yeah.
Yeah. So eternal sleet, I think, would be my favorite. Definitely.
Is this weather an eternal sleet? That's the kind of song that we'll be playing constantly about it as well, isn't it? Yeah. Or is it "We'll Sleet Again"?
Oh, very good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something like that. Sleet boy, sleet boy. That perfect sleet boy.
Yeah. I think my favorite British 2000s rap group/personality was probably the Sleets.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see what you did there.
Yeah, that was painful, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a very influential female punk group called the Sleets, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
We should move on from that. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. What other weather things would you like to discuss or tell the? Oh, we should say, by the way, if anyone can hear the frolicking in the background, that's because it's half term and. There is an offspring.
Oh, there romping. Is. Sorry, did you? Yeah. Could you just hear that? Yeah.
Well, that's okay, isn't it? Fine. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. What weather would we like to discuss with the world?
What weathers are there? List them. List all the weathers.
Well, there's extreme extraterrestrial weather.
Right.
Do we want to talk about extreme extraterrestrial weather?
Like sulfuric acid storms in Venus, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Venus, hot enough to melt lead and it rains acid. That's a weather, isn't it? That's a strong weather game.
It makes all other weathers look a bit puny, doesn't it?
Well, not all other weathers, because like Jupiter's weather's bonkers, isn't it?
Jupiter has a storm the size of the Earth, right?
Bigger than, yeah. Yeah.
It's famous.
But also
its famous spot.
Yeah. There's there's a joke in there about teenagers and spots bigger than the Earth, which I'm not going to bother making. We think, don't we, that it rains diamonds low down in Jupiter's atmosphere. Have you familiar
really?
With this?
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so again, I'm not Googling anything, so Jupiterologists, feel free to write in and correct us. Or don't, you know. It's not like I'm going to correct myself anyway. As I understand it, right, big clouds of, I think, possibly methane, but hydrocarbons anyway, in the upper atmosphere, and extraordinarily powerful lightning, far more powerful than on Earth, causes soot to fall into the incredibly high pressures of the deep atmosphere of Jupiter, where the pressure is high enough that it compresses that hydrocarbon soot into diamonds that then fall further down until they eventually burn in the very high temperatures further towards the core.
I'm picturing in my head perfectly cut, like decorative diamonds, right? Mm. Sort of.
That's how diamonds are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what a diamond is. Yeah. Did you just say heptagonal?
I said hexagonal, but thinking about it, they're
right. I thought you said heptagonal for a minute then.
Heptagonal.
Yeah, I was just thinking heptagonal's good, isn't it? It's a word that people don't use very often. Hexagonal's like mundane. It's, you know, it's like the bread and butter of shape words.
Aren't 50p pieces heptagonal?
Could be. Septagonal's good as well, isn't it? But then octagonal's gone back to...
Oh, do I mean septagonal? Maybe.
Maybe septagonal. Yeah, probably septagonal. Like, octagonal's gone back to mundane, hasn't it? Maybe not as mundane as hexagonal, but I feel like it's a pretty standard word. And then there's nonagonal, which is just great.
It doesn't sound right, nonagonal, does it?
No, it sounds like it's wrong. Maybe it is wrong, who knows? But a nine-sided shape is a nonagon, isn't it? So hey. I don't know that many shapes then, because you go straight up to things like icosahedron, which is loads, isn't it? That's 20. And then dodecahedron's 12.
Dodecahedron's 12, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know lots of different words for shapes. Maybe we should make them up.
Yeah, maybe we should. Yeah. Do they have to be, so does a dodecahedron or icosahedron, do they have all the same shaped faces?
Number of sides.
Well, but are the sides all the same shape?
Oh, I see. I don't know. I think so, but I might be wrong.
Because if they are, then there's only so many, right?
There's only so many shapes in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Some shapes can't be tiled into a sphere, right?
Oh, is that? They can't be tiled into a sphere. Because you could draw a shape with any number of sides until those sides become infinitely small, right? I mean, what is a circle if not a polygon with infinitely many sides?
Yeah, but the hedron part of it is it's a three-dimensional shape.
It's a three-dimensional shape, yeah. So... You can't, yeah, that's probably it. That's why you go from dodecahedron to icosahedron. There's no possible way. How about if you use the other dimensions, you know, like you get into hypercubes and things like that? Does that give you the opportunity to make more sided shapes?
Probably.
I mean, can you experiment with your thorax?
I'll give it a go. I'll just put some shapes in there and see what comes out.
Yeah, okay. What you got for me?
All right. Okay.
Is one a gnome?
Yes, there's a lot of gnomes in there already. Yeah.
Mm.
This isn't really working because anything that emerges is just going to immediately melt
any
human mind that gazes upon it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it does prove my long-standing hypothesis that an icosahedron in four-dimensional space is a gnome.
Right.
Yeah. Or rather, a gnome is a four-dimensional icosahedron. That's where they come from.
I see. That does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're actually a shape.
By which I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Like your thorax, though.
Just like that, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a water spout in the sea recently.
Did you?
Yeah,
oh my God.
I was in Western Supermare on the pier. No, it wasn't Western. It was Clevedon on the pier.
Right.
And there was a great big water spout.
Amazing. I've never seen that. Are you sure it wasn't just somebody doing backstroke and spitting water, or alternatively a porpoise going?
I can't rule out that it might have been a porpoise squirting whale oil from its blowhole.
Hey, that has reminded me that we've got a listener correction, which I should mention, which is from
I'm not sure I feel about listener corrections. Listeners should feel, I mean, they should know their place, right?
Well, they should, but this one, I feel like it's a good point, well made, and
okay.
We should probably mention it, which refers to the whale oil discussion in episode one. And Martin Arnold points out that the whale oil from the porpoises actually should be marketed as all porpoise oil.
Yeah, that's good. That's right. Yeah, he's right about that.
Yeah. So, you know, fair enough. Hats off.
That's why our whale milking business never really took off.
Well, I mean, it's still very much on the cards, though, right? It's in development. The buildings are still going up.
Yeah, we squeeze a
or
lot.
Or down
of...
in the case of the tank, the well tank.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of squeezing, haven't we?
I mean, if I'm honest, the squeezing has just continued at the previous pace, which is a lot of squeezing.
Yeah.
At the moment, the oil is just generally disappearing.
I hope the tank gets built soon. Because my spare room is utterly full of river dolphins right now. And I really need to ship them. They're just stacked from floor to ceiling.
Yeah, my house, I tried to store all the oil in my house, but what's happened is it's just kind of leaked out of the various non-oil tight bits, and now all the ceilings are coming down, and you know, all the wallpapers come off the walls, and well, everything's just completely soaked in oil.
Yeah,
the house is going to have to be stripped out and rebuilt. So don't pump your house full of oil. Is my advice to you.
Yeah. At least you blocked up all the gaps in the windows and things, and the letterbox, right?
Yeah, I blocked them up with, you know...
dolphins.
With bits of bits of dolphins, yeah. You know, shoved them nozzle first into the letterbox, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah. But the oil just stayed there long enough to kind of dissolve most of the fittings and then escaped, unfortunately. So there you go. Never mind. It's all right. We'll be rich from whale oil soon, so it'll be fine.
What's the most extreme weather you've ever experienced firsthand?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like I must have been in some extreme weathers at some point. I can't think what they are. Do you have an answer to that to hand?
I do. It's not particularly dramatic, but you remember the famous 1987 storm that hit the UK?
I do. I say I remember it. I remember that it had happened, but I actually slept through it.
Right, really? Well, yeah. That day I had cross country at school, and so I remember having to run like several miles around the town my school was in. And
right,
it wasn't the worst of it, but it was pretty blowy.
Was this the day of the storm? So before it got really bad in the night?
I believe so. It was a long time ago, so my memory might be faulty, but I believe it was. Yes, I believe it was.
Unlikely to have been the next day, right? Yeah, nothing was working the next day. We couldn't go to school or anything.
Yeah, the country just broke in half and fell in the sea, didn't it?
It did. There were trees everywhere, gnomes running rampant, whales through all the windows.
Ghosts, a lot of ghosts.
Haunted goat heads just appearing on people's upper bodies willy-nilly, spouting any number of ancient languages.
Or like willy-billy.
Yes, quite. Yeah, good point. Yeah. There were mermen just kind of walking around with their bits out, scaring everybody. Their disgusting, flabby manatee upper bodies flapping and...
Yeah,
they're horrible,
staring
fat,
uselessly
hairy
up into
legs.
The sky.
Yeah, well, their fat, hairy legs kind of kick and flail. Oh, man. They've got these really thick black hair, haven't they? Like, you know, like a really hirsute man. And their bum cheeks just covered in wiry, black, thick hair. Oh, God. They're really horrible creatures.
I think you're being quite harsh on the mermaid.
Well, I know that's beauty to some people, right? There are people who find that kind of thing attractive. It's just I'm not one of them.
I think you should widen your...
Man at ease. That's how they got their name, isn't it? Because they kind of tend to just kind of lounge on the floor with, you know,
they're men at ease.
Just doing nothing in particular, just slowly rubbing their legs up and down. Disgusting creatures, if you ask me.
I don't know, you see one sitting on a rock as you're sailing your galleon along, and sitting on the rock and delicately combing his leg hair in the sunlight
with his flippers.
Yes.
Flapping his flippers against his hairy legs, singing the beautiful song of his people.
Yeah. I think it's a very alluring sight.
Yeah. What does the song sound like? This song that has entranced so many sailors.
Well, it's hard to say because, yeah, you know, manatees' entire vocal
process is quite... No one's ever survived it, actually, have they?
Yeah. I think it sounds a bit like this. I think it's that.
I think you're right. Yeah, that's the the closest science has come to because obviously if you heard a perfect reproduction of it, you'd be immediately entranced and walk into the sea and drown. So
yeah,
you can never get it perfectly right. But you're right. I've heard an approximation of it as being kind of like, kind of noise. Yeah.
Are we confusing mermaids and sirens? Yeah. I'm not sure mermaids and sirens are quite the same thing.
The sirens are the ones that go, woo!
Yeah, the beautiful song of the sirens. Nina, Nina! And so on.
Are we getting them? Are sirens not actually mermaids then?
I don't think so. Are they? I don't know. Are they depicted as having fishy bits?
Is a mermaid not something that helps you merm? Or is it fizzy merm? You get a glass of delicious merm and put it through the soda stream and you've got mermaid.
Delicious mermaid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that one's probably right, isn't it?
How do you get the merm? I don't know what merm is.
Merm.
It sounds lovely.
It's a sort of oily substance. So we
get manatees and extract their juices.
Yeah, if you squeeze a manatee, you get merm.
Oh, right. You don't get any pressure of soil, but you do get the merm. Delicious merm.
They're not whales, are they? So they can't produce any oils.
No, sure. Yeah. But you get delicious merm, put it through the soda stream. Other ways of carbonating beverages exist. And and you've got mermaid. Yeah.
Right.
What's your preferred way of carbonating a beverage, David Cheat?
Well, I was gonna ask. I don't really know. Just could get a lot of carbon dioxide into it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You could just squeeze the air, as discussed last time.
Ah, just squeeze the air into it.
Air until you've got liquid air, and then you just pluck out all the oxygens and hydrogens.
Oh, yeah, with a pair of meaty tweezers.
Yeah.
Get them all out. Oh, no, it's iron tweezers, isn't it, that you want for that? And can't remember what you need the meaty tweezers for. Probably something to do with mermaid hair.
You'd get some carbons from somewhere, wouldn't you?
Carbons, yeah, you would. Actually, there's carbons and dioxides already in the air, don't you? Just kind of... Easier, rather than getting all the nitrogens and the oxygens out, it's probably easier to pluck out the carbon dioxides and push them into the merm.
That's probably quicker, isn't it? Yeah.
You jam
the right...
substantially less by volume, yeah.
Give it a bit of a shake, obviously, and then you're done.
Yeah, delicious mermaid. What's your... So two questions. What's your favourite manatee squeezing method? And how many manatees do you have to squeeze to get a glass of delicious merm?
Right, so my favourite method is sort of classic round the neck, two-handed big hug. And then a real squeeze!
Like a bear hug. Yeah,
just like that, yeah. Yeah, you've got to pick exactly the right spot, just at the neck. And then that does it. And each manatee produces about a teaspoonful of merm per squeeze.
Right, so you need quite a lot of manatees. Do the manatees recover, or is it like a one-use gig?
Oh, no. Oh, no, they never recover.
They pop at the end of it, do they?
You got to keep going till they pop. Yeah.
Once you pop, you just can't stop. That's how it is with manatees, isn't it?
Yeah.
You get that teaspoon of delicious merm, you're like, oh, go on, let's have another one. Pop. Like that.
Yeah. Exactly that, yeah.
Yeah. Do you kind of latch onto the snout and suck at the same time then to get the merm out, or does it just dribble out, or what?
It sort of oozes out
of its vent.
Of its vent, yes. It's the manatee vent.
Right.
You just put a little tiny cup under its vent before you start.
Right. Okay, so you don't have to suck anything out of it.
Nah, well, you can if you like, but it's not necessary.
Purely recreational.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say it's different from my method, that's all.
All right, what's your method?
Well, I lure them onto a patch of land at the base of a cliff. You know, it doesn't have to be a big cliff, you know, like 50 feet will do it.
Yeah.
I lure them with, you know, they've got a real thing for Rubik's Cubes. So I put a couple of Rubik's Cubes down and that gets them interested. And they come over and they just kind of flap at them uselessly with their flippers. So it'll keep them busy for ages. They've never really managed to do anything except flap them around with their flippers.
I assume this cliff is near a beach.
I mean, they'll go a long way inland for a Rubik's Cube.
Right, okay, yeah.
No one knows how they detect them. Something to do with scent, maybe, possibly. So you can just choose the best cliff. And then I kind of go up to the top, and I usually take a woven mattress with me. A woven mat, rather. And then I just jump off and body slam them. And obviously that goes straight to the bursting, but it does release the merm while you're at it.
Right, I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you had the woven mat, if the woven mat was big enough,
yeah,
and you had a load of like dried seaweed, you could also, while you're there, make an enormous sushi.
You could, because the mat actually kind of absorbs the merm from the bursting manatee. And then I just kind of suck and chew on the mat on the way home. You know,
right on the bus on the way home.
Yeah, yeah, the kind of merm soaked mat. I mean, on the bus, I you know, the bus doesn't always let me on because I am very much covered in manatee gore at this point.
Yeah,
but, you know, that's just part of the fun, really. Weather, anyway. You were going to talk about weather.
Yeah, I forgot what I was going to say now.
Oh no.
Yeah. Oh, you never answered if you'd been in any kind of extreme weather events. Mine was pretty tame.
Right.
But have you ever been in a proper hurricane or?
I don't think I have ever been in like really extreme weather. I was just trying to think. I'd probably remember if I had been, right?
Hmm.
I mean, obviously, I lived through that same storm you lived through, but you know, when it was at its peak in the middle of the night, I was in bed, so I woke up to its after effects rather than having been out in it or anything. Yeah. No, I don't think so. Don't think of it being, you know, like a really, really proper extreme weather thing.
We don't have that extreme weather here, do we?
No, it's always, you know, either nice or miserable. It never goes to life-threatening, does it, really?
Yeah, or not often. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very unusual.
The best we normally get is quite hot, and the worst we normally get is quite grim.
Yeah.
But we never go far outside that range.
No, that's the one kind of proper life-threatening style weather event that's happened in our lifetime, isn't it? Is that, that one hurricane? There you go. Hooray for England, land of mild geology and weather. Like, there are historical precedents for extreme events, aren't they? But you remember you were talking about the village that disappeared due to an enormous
tidal surge. Oh, I remember the old English word for that. The great mound drowning. It's the grotter mandrooking.
Grotter man...
Drooking, I think.
Drooking. Grotter Mandrooking. Yeah, that does make a good name.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're right, Grotter. Oh, you're so lovely, thank you. Grotter Mandrooking.
Yeah. Again, to apologise to any 11th century Britons who are listening, I've butchered the pronunciation with probably all the words of that too.
It's an interesting thing. Like, we refer to ourselves as Britons and you just refer to the 11th century Britons. It's a word that's particularly used in the context of people being patriotic as well, isn't it? And of course it's nonsense, isn't it? Because the Britons lived here before the place was rampaged across by Angles and Saxons and Danes. And there's sod all of them left in our bits of the country now. There's Britonic heritage in the western extremities, but
mostly Saxon and Norman. I make up now. The Angles also mostly gone.
Yeah, yeah. Although the Normans are Vikings as well, right? They're originally Danes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why Norman is from the Northmen.
Indeed.
Yeah. Although, interestingly, here's the thing. So I don't know the answer to this. Someone can tell me. Or not. Why don't you give me an answer, Dave, regardless of whether you know the answer or not?
So I'll deliver it confidently.
Okay. So... Germanic tribes in England, the Saxon kingdoms, and Danes from the north, coming overseas and setting up the Daneland. And then the Normans come over after that's all been settled, pretty much. I just asserted the Normans, because they were a Viking kingdom set up a couple of hundred years before in the north of what's now France, were Vikings, and that's why they're called the Normans instead of from the Northmen rather than any other name for French, like the Frankish tribes or whatever. I just said they were Vikings too, but I'm not sure that's right, is it? A, if you think about it, like famously, they were generally dark-haired, and that doesn't imply a Nordic ancestry. But B, it was not like, as far as I know, maybe it was, I'm not aware of it being a population replacement like it was with the Saxons coming in here and wiping out the Britons. As far as I'm aware, it was kind of a taking over of the top levels of society by Rollo, right? Came and took over. And I'm not sure they ever replaced the population. I think they might have just taken over the running of the area, in which case they, in terms of the genetics of it, would still have been French or modern day French rather than of Danish origin. Does that sound right? Does that explain that why they're dark haired?
Yeah. I think that's entirely true.
Yeah.
Okay, and I say great. That with absolute confidence.
Yeah. So although William the Conqueror may have been of Danish heritage, not all of the Norman army would have been.
Definitely. And the true, Normans, 100%.
Yeah. And the Normans didn't replace all the Saxons they beat either. They just dominated them, right?
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Yeah. I'm always surprised the Norman conquest of Britain. Populations were much smaller back then, but how small the armies
were. They were gnome-sized, weren't they? They were like...
They were tiny. Each of them was no more than an inch high. Gnome or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was what you build the gnomes from, right? You mine them no more and smelt it into gnomes. And yeah. Anyway, sorry, I've gone off on a tangent. We were discussing the gnome invasion. Unusual. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the armies involved were...
The gnomon invasion.
Yes.
The gnomon conquest. They were gnomes. Proof.
They were gnomes, yes.
The gnomon conquest.
The key thing to remember is gnomes.
It is. Sorry, anyway, you were telling me more about the Norman conquest.
Yes.
Some about population sizes.
Not much really. Yeah, population sizes are small, and the size of these armies, it didn't take that many people to conquer a country back in those days.
Mm. So, hey, we're talking about population, because there's two types of conquest, right? There's that kind of conquest where you replace the ruling classes and keep the general population in penury. And there's the kind of invasion that the Saxons did where they just murdered everybody and took over their lands. They're very different things, aren't they? Population replacement. I was just this morning reading about how our techniques for extracting ancient DNA, like really old Stone Age DNA, are getting better and better. And whereas we thought that there was a kind of slow and peaceful transition from hunter-gathering to farming as the kind of habits spread, it looks like in what is currently Denmark, which is why it popped to mind, I suppose, because we're talking about the Danes to an extent. I don't know whether this happened anywhere else, but there was a hunter-gatherer society, and then Mesolithic farmers came in and murdered everybody and took over. Right. So that genetic line stops with almost zero crossover and an entirely new population take over. Right. Because obviously farmers had the advantage. There's a separate thing about how, 20 malnourished early farmers are still going to beat 5 extremely healthy hunters, right?
Right.
Because you could support a higher population density with farming, even though every individual hunter-gatherer was probably quite healthy. Yeah, and then 1,000 years later, an entirely new population with their origins in southern Russia, who were bigger, physically bigger, came in and slaughtered all of them. And
physically bigger, 20 foot tall?
No, just bigger boned. But anyway, another...
Just very wide.
Imagine an inverse gnome, right?
Right.
So Yeah, they were to humans as gnomes are to humans, but backwards, right? They were like reverse gnomes.
Right, that does make sense, yes. Yeah,
yeah, but they swept in and they murdered everybody and took over again with basically zero gene transfer, which means no interbreeding. They just killed everybody. And that population is still the dominant population of Scandinavia today.
Really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
It is interesting, isn't it? So these, you know, these kind of slow transition things don't seem to be particularly real. Like the general model of murder everybody and steal everything seems to be how things generally roll in human history. Yeah. We're nice, aren't we? We're nice. In fact, we were
humans
talking yesterday about that.
How
we,
brilliant, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We're talking about how we've done quite well at kind of placing this veneer of civilization on, like we're still, you know, we haven't changed in evolutionary terms from those people. We're still those savages underneath, aren't we? But we do quite well at pretending we're not. So hooray for us, I think. Yeah, yeah. Like even to the point where we don't think we are those people.
Even though we are.
Yes. Well, I know that you are. I've seen what you've been
doing. I
haven't
replaced any indigenous populations in ages, Joel.
Or at least not any that anybody bothers to pay any attention to. You keep yourself to small islands dotted around the coast, don't you?
Neighbours' houses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're just gradually replacing the indigenous population of the village that you live in.
With, yeah, yeah. with me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There's been very little interbreeding so far. It's mostly just replacement.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just placing your livestock of disgusting half manatee, half hairy man.
Well, I've got to store the river dolphins somewhere as well.
Yeah.
That's the main reason. Yeah.
Is there any competition between them for all the paddling pools and baths and things that you've got there? the mermen all right, just kind of on the sofa?
Well, the mermen are largely oblivious, I think.
Right, okay.
They just sort of stumble around bumping into things, looking at the ceiling.
Actually, there's only so many of them you need to store at any one time, isn't there? Because you're popping quite a lot of them every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Once they're
get rid of the deflated manatee husks afterwards.
Yeah. What do you do with them?
Sell them.
Right. As what, though?
Manatee costumes. Manatee costumes,
right. Oh, so when they burst, they're right. Okay, you kind of keep them.
They just burst at one end. Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. You just slip them on. I mean, my approach obviously ends up with them in many, many very small pieces, which are quite useful for a mulch, but not much more. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I tend to just use mine as a mulch, but as you know, I mean, I suppose I could adopt your process, but I just enjoy doing it my way.
Well, I mean, express yourself, man. Just do your own thing.
If you're enjoying yourself, Dave, can it really be wrong? Whatever they say.
As long as you're having fun, it's morally justifiable.
That's true. That's
my motto.
That's what you say to all of those people in the basement, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And so far, none of them have objected in any.
No.
You know, no.
In any successful,
I mean, not that they
way.
Could. Yeah. 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 Well, I think we've done a pretty good job of discussing the weather.
I think we have. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's been an informative.
About the weather.
Yeah.
Oh, do we need to decide if weather's good or bad? Is that?
Oh, gosh. Of course we do. Weather, good or bad. Thumbs up or down, Dave?
Thumbs down. Don't like it.
Okay. I'm going to give it the thumbs up just for sleet. I think there's enough sleet to give me a thumbs up on all the weather. So it's a hung jury on weather. So we're going to let it continue.
Excellent.
Once we seize power, weather will still be allowed.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's the kind of actionable consequence of these votes, right? It's like thumbs up, once we've seized power, it'll be mandatory. Thumbs down, once we've seized power, it'll be banned. And a split vote like that means we'll just let it continue as it is.
I think so, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, great. Okay.
Requires a majority to change something, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, so weather will be allowed to continue. You will either be pleased or disappointed to hear. Great. All that remains, I think, is to work out what we're talking about next time.
What about crime?
Yes, good. Crime. Crime it is. See you next time for crime. Bye!
Bye!
Bye!